Hello, I'm Manila Chan. You are tuned into Modus Operandi. Tech titans around the world are sounding the alarms. They're calling on lawmakers everywhere to pump the brakes on emerging AI technology. So when the so-called godfather of AI, Geoffrey Hinton, announced his resignation from Google earlier this year, citing his regret for developing such tech, we'll examine how the world's top two economies are handling these warnings. All right, let's get into the MO. The U.S. and China, the world's top two economies, have been locked in an economic war since the Trump era in 2018, when Donald Trump leveled unprecedented tariffs on China, a move that aimed to encourage Americans to buy made in America by making Chinese imports more expensive. But the fight didn't actually begin there. It actually started back under Barack Obama, when then the Obama administration lodged a number of complaints against China with the WTO, the World Trade Organization. Mr. Obama made no qualms about his position, saying this, quote, "I will go anywhere in the world to open new markets for American products, and I will not stand by when our competitors don't play by the rules. We've brought trade cases against China at nearly twice the rate as the last administration, and it's made a difference." That was Barack Obama back in January of 2012. So it's no wonder that the tech wars or tech race between these superpowers have reached the levels that it has, even to the point that experts in the industry find chilling and are calling on lawmakers to rein it in. So joining us to discuss is Andy Mock. He is a senior research fellow at the Center for China and Globalization. You can follow Andy on Twitter at Andy Mock. That's M-O-K, Andy Mock at Twitter. All right, Andy, thank you so much for joining us. So first, can you give us an overview of China's new draft legislation on AI? I mean, what are the main principles of it? How might you compare or perhaps contrast China getting ahead of this kind of tech as compared to the U.S. approach?
That's such an important question, Manila. And I think to understand this, we need to first understand China's legal system in general. So the U.S. talks a lot about separation of powers, which really separates political power vertically. But in the U.S., political power is also fragmented horizontally as well, meaning that there are certain things that can be done at the national level that may not translate to the state level, may not translate to the municipal level. However, China is vertically integrated and horizontally integrated from a legal and a political perspective. So what this means is that it is able to not only conceive, but implement and enforce important new laws or sets of laws, including those around artificial intelligence and the digital economy in general. So what we're looking at with the draft AI regulations is a holistic and systematic approach that considers the technological breakthroughs, the business implications, but also the effect on society and national security as well. So I think what we can expect from this is a comprehensive, well thought out law set of policies that not only work on paper, but also can be implemented at the national, provincial, municipal, even neighborhood levels as well in China. And I think this makes China very, very different from the U.S. and perhaps most other countries in the world.
All right, so this sounds like it's scalable, the approach that China is taking so far. Now, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace wrote a very short article that, in effect, sees China as sort of the testing grounds for such laws to rein in AI, perhaps a model for how other countries may approach ethical concerns. Now, most interesting to me, and they only touch on this one, was the question around autonomous weapons and arms control. Seeing as the U.S. has recently used really bellicose language towards China regarding Taiwan, will China be open to discussing autonomous military tech with the U.S. going forward?
Well, those are two very separate questions, Manila. Let me address them each in turn. So is China kind of a proving ground, a testing site for these laws? I think absolutely it is. So if we look at the other very dramatic technological breakthrough in modern times, that was the rise of the internet. And at that time, the president of the United States at the time, Bill Clinton, made fun of China by saying that by trying to control the internet, control information on the internet, that would be like nailing Jell-O to the wall. And he said, good luck with that. And in fact, what China demonstrated was not only could it, quote unquote, nail Jell-O to the wall, but in fact, it was vitally necessary to do so. So what we've seen all around the world and in the United States is that an unmanaged internet can result in terrible things happening not only online but offline as well. So disinformation, cyberbullying, but even violence in the real world. So I think China is ahead of the curve here when it comes to these kinds of regulations. And we may see other countries, even the United States, copy some of the principles, the laws, and the procedures and policies that China is implementing around artificial intelligence. So to the second part of your question, if we look at what's going on, and of course, AI, whether we're looking at generative AI, other types of artificial intelligence, is a general purpose technology, which means that it can be used for business, it can be used for education, and as you touched on, it can be used for war, in military affairs. And this is a very, very important aspect that has many, many people concerned. Everything from, if you watch science fiction movies like The Terminator, could these weapons one day turn on their masters and destroy mankind? To could they be enormously destructive at the hands of humans, like nuclear weapons? So certainly, I think every country around the world recognizes the importance of some sort of agreement to manage these risks. And I think China is no different. We have to see what the U.S. does in terms of its future actions. And the other thing to recognize here is that there are important path dependencies, meaning that if the U.S. does continue with this very bellicose course of action in increasingly provocative and escalatory behaviors towards China, it's hard to imagine this not influencing how China views the development of AI weapons. So certainly, I think it would be a win for the world if the tensions between the U.S. and particularly these U.S. provocations can be dialed down. There would be a number of benefits, including a more rational and a better set of policies around AI in the military sphere.
Now, as the development of generative AI or chatbots, ChatGPT, and all of that accelerate in technologically advanced countries, you know, such as China, Russia, the U.S., all these various EU countries, what sort of disparities do you foresee growing between these wealthier countries versus, you know, countries which are not quite there yet, these still developing nations? I mean, wouldn't this actually widen the gap in wealth disparity?
Well, that's such a great question, Manila. Typically, we've seen these kinds of technologies, especially information technologies, widen the gap between the haves and the have-nots. I think we can make some good arguments that what we see in wealth disparities in developed countries, especially in places like the United States, between CEOs and average workers or the heads of these tech titans like the Googles, like the Facebooks, really is driven by these advances in technology. However, with AI, it might be a little bit more of a double-edged sword in that, of course, these technologies can widen the gap between the haves and the have-nots, but there's also some evidence to show that they actually empower people in the middle, towards the bottom of whatever hierarchical ladder that we're thinking of, and allows them to be more competitive within whatever system they're operating in. So I would not say that unambiguously that this is going to widen the gap, the digital gap, but certainly we do need to pay attention to this. And, you know, one of the big concerns many people that are following these developments is the concentration of economic power amongst big tech companies. And we see in China, of course, that this is something that the government does recognize and is not only able, but willing and able to take action to prevent this kind of over-concentration of power.
How about within each of these countries, domestically? Let's just take the U.S. as one example. There is great concern that the rapid pace at which AI could make jobs such as customer service call centers obsolete. How do you view the anticipated tech takeover of these types of jobs? Is the fear warranted? And should U.S. lawmakers actually intervene?
No, certainly the impact of any major technological breakthrough on employment is an important topic. We can look at electricity that put many people out of jobs. The internet, as we touched on earlier, also had a dramatic impact, not only on wealth distribution, but on employment as well. So similarly, I think AI is expected by many to have a profoundly disruptive impact on white-collar jobs that traditionally were thought to be safe, accountants, lawyers. I've even seen ChatGPT being used to run an equity fund to invest in stocks. So perhaps even Warren Buffett's job may be at risk. So this is certainly a concern. Some on the more optimistic side believe that this could lead to what some call a post-scarcity era, and meaning that we can produce so much of everything through generative AI, through AI linked to 3D printing, that there will be no scarcity of anything in the world, and we would reach a sort of a communist utopia, perhaps. And Marx might be smiling down from heaven at this prospect.
All right, coming up next, would you let AI decide your fate in a court of law? We'll discuss it when we return with Andy Mock. Sit tight, the MO will be right back.
Known in Vietnam as the American War, the Vietnam War lasted for almost two decades and dragged in numerous countries.
Nhưng mà người cầm đầu của Mỹ nói rằng sang Việt Nam là như thế giúp Việt Nam. Và thì còn anh em thì không thống kê được.
Hundreds of thousands of American troops were sent to the country to back the South Vietnamese army.
Máy bay rồi nó xả. Xóa cho đây đâu có biết cái chất lượng đấy, không biết cái chất lượng mà ta này mới biết, ta này ra nói là đó là chất lượng quá.
American soldiers murdered resistors mercilessly, burned down entire villages and spread dangerous chemicals.
Cần nghĩ lại những người Mỹ, những người lính Mỹ rất trẻ và họ nhận thức không.
Did the Americans ever fully acknowledge what they did? And are the Vietnamese veterans ready to forgive?
Chẳng nhận là gia đình chúng tôi bắt mất trong chiến tranh, mà cả quê hương nước cũng bị mất mất trong cái sự đau thương của gia Mỹ.
I'll look forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
Do
A robot must protect its own existence. Its own existence.
What?
Are you crazy?
Yes.
War took a lot. I lost most of my friends. Back there, I was broken. I wasn't able to save anyone. I did nothing in that day. I met Wilson 2013. And God put Willie in my way and make me start talking to Willie.
Willie for Ami is the heaven. I'm happy that Rami find his Willie.
He become my new friend, the one who's not gonna die in war. Because he is, he will stay alive, he will stay next to me. If I'm not crazy enough, I'm not gonna make it.
Welcome back to The MO. I'm Manila Chan. So there's been a lot of talk surrounding AI taking jobs from the working class. But what about exclusive career paths like judges or maybe even someday lawmakers themselves? Andy Mok, senior fellow at the Center for China and Globalization, is back. Thank you for sticking with us, Andy. So in China, though it's not widely used just yet, there's a legal AI platform called Xiaobaogong Intelligent Sentencing Prediction System. Now, it's being used by judges and prosecutors in criminal law there. The system suggests penalties based on big data analysis of cases in its system and gleans from judgments of previous similar cases made by a human judge. Now, could this lead to fairer sentencing? You know, an argument long made here against U.S. sentencing processes, which communities of color here say are overwhelmingly harsher on them.
Well, Manila, another very, very good question. So we all know that humans are fallible. They have biases that they may recognize. We have biases we might not recognize. So at least in theory, an AI algorithm or application could certainly result in more fair sentencing. But of course, the devil's in the details. One of the biggest areas of research and development in artificial intelligence is what I believe they call alignment, that we don't want to inadvertently apply biases or other assumptions or principles mistakenly that would result in outcomes that whoever the people are that decide these things realize are not actually in alignment with the good of society. But I think here, again, to contrast the U.S. and China, is that the Chinese approach from a government perspective is very rational and scientific, whereas the U.S., to a large degree, is based on faith and ideology that may not necessarily be grounded in facts and empiricism, meaning observing what really happens in the real world and adapting your approach based on that. So I think we have to see, but one of the things certainly I think that China brings to the table not only a large market, not only a large STEM contingent, science, technology, engineering, management, scientists, engineers, et cetera, but also the ability to conduct many of these quote unquote experiments to look at what are the most effective and appropriate ways to apply artificial intelligence. And again, I come back to this a very important idea that AI is a GPT, a general purpose technology, meaning that it can be used for almost anything we can imagine. So stay tuned.
Now, worth noting, AI can only assess the data that it's given. So if adjudicated cases by human judges were particularly harsh, the AI would then use that as part of its calculation. So, you know, AI is only as good as the data it's given, right? So, Andy, on a philosophical note, what are your thoughts more broadly on how AI might impact mankind as a whole? Will this tech be good for us, or will this lead to our own ruin?
Well, I think, you know, again, if many of these scientists and other people involved in developing AI are correct, one of the unique things about artificial intelligence compared to other technologies is just the range of possible outcomes. So, I think maybe that's debatable. But what I mean by this is certainly there are credible people saying that AI, at least potentially, is dangerous to the level of an extinction event for mankind. So, of course, that would be very bad for humans. To others who say that this could result in not only a post-scarcity economy, but would allow humans to become gods, meaning that they're not only omniscient, they know everything, but they're also immortal. Ray Kurzweil, who wrote a book many years ago called The Singularity, predicted this, that because of advances in computing and artificial intelligence, that humans would either be able to biologically live forever or be recreated with sentience in the cloud and achieve immortality that way. So I think the range is very, very broad. One other thing I want to go back to is one of the challenges of AI, if you think about sentencing, is that a lot of times AI works, as you say, by looking at the data. It gives better answers, but we don't know why. So justice for many humans requires comprehensibility. So we don't know why person A got a very harsh sentence and person B got a very lenient sentence, even though, quote unquote, those are the correct outcomes based on an analysis of the data. That could be problematic. So again, this raises a host of intriguing questions that I think we'll all be discovering the answers to.
Now, last, Andy, as the tech wars around the world heat up, do you see a need for a global treaty on this matter, like what we saw with the Old START treaty between the U.S. and then Soviet Union, or perhaps more recently, the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal? And how do we even get there to this global unified position on AI safety when the world seems more at odds now than it ever did during the Cold War?
That's a tough question to answer, Manila. So one of the differences between AI or cyber weapons in general when we compare them to nuclear weapons is that with nuclear weapons, part of the value is letting your adversary know you have them. And of course, it's easy to verify, relatively easy to verify the existence of these weapons. The issue with cyber weapons, and I would put perhaps AI in this category, is what makes them potent is actually your adversary not realizing or suspecting that you have that capability. So this makes it very, very difficult to have greater transparency around these kinds of weapons. And I think this is the conceptual hurdle that has to be addressed. And perhaps there'll be a way to solve it, but another way, of course, is if countries can live more harmoniously together, and if countries do not seek hegemony or to interfere in the affairs of other countries, then certainly that reduces the likelihood of conflict where AI weapons, cyber weapons, or even nuclear or other conventional type of weapons would be used.
Andy Mok from the Center for China and Globalization, thank you so much for this insightful conversation. Now, I don't know about you, but this rapid advancement of AI goes beyond the uncanny valley, as first posited by the Japanese robotics professor Masahiro Mori back in 1970. This is letting a faceless algorithm within a computer guide humanity. I don't know, something kind of creepy about that. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.